Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Susan C., a compulsive overeater from California.
Thanks, Catherine. This is my cat. Sorry. She likes to come to the meetings. Hi, my name is Susan C. I'm a grateful member of Overeaters Anonymous. I am a compulsive eater and a grazer. And today I know that this program has saved my life. Welcome. Got a lot of newcomers. Welcome. Welcome to the newcomers. You know, when I came in, they say, you know, just keep coming back. And I say that too. But what I believe now when I hear people's just stay. Take your seat and stay. Whether you're eating, whether you're not eating, whether you believe this program is going to work, or you don't think this program is going to work, whether you have a God of your understanding, or you're not even sure why the world is spinning, it doesn't matter. Just come and stay, because here you will find solutions. You know, we come in thinking that food is the problem. I mean, we come in thinking that food is the answer. Food is the problem. Because food in and of itself, if you put something down in front of me that I don't like, it could sit there until it rots and goes back to dust, and I'm not going to touch it. It's not going to jump off the table. I have to take some action to take that food and put it in my mouth. And I learned how to not do that here for reasons other than nutrition, because I want to eat because I want to celebrate or I want to commiserate and anything in between. You know, I came in over into the rooms over 9 years ago. And I have about oh, all, I have over 6.5 years of abstinence, so there's a little time gap there. I came in at 63 years old, so I wasn't a baby when I came in. So those who think, oh, well, I'm too old, I'm too this, you're not anything, you're just right, and we're glad that you're here. My story is not a story of a huge weight gain, 25 pounds, maybe 30, up and down. I came in be not for the vanity, because I came in at a healthy body weight. I came in for the sanity because I had and still have an irrational relationship with food. I would not think to put a banana in my gas tank to make the car run, but I'll put everything and anything in my mouth to keep me from feeling feelings, from keeping me to do the next thing I need to do. So I misuse food. When I misuse food, I abuse my body. When I abuse my body, I shut off the connection to God and a life beyond my wildest dreams, which is what this program promises us. It gives us dreams. Some of us don't come in with any dreams. You come in totally hopeless, hopeless, feeling that, you know, I don't even know why I'm here. I just, you know, we come in with thinking that we might want to take a permanent, try a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And what I can tell you, newcomers, is that you will find what you need here. You will hear your story. You may or may not hear it tonight, but you keep coming back to this meeting, to other meetings. You hear people talk about solution. You want to hear them talk about this is what happened. You know, you know, once again, I got into X food, or I was so unhappy that I did Y with food, you know, and then you're going to hear them talk about solution. I was told when I came in, I want to talk 1 minute about the problem, which in the beginning was always about the food. Now it's about other stuff. And I want to talk 2 minutes about the solution. And the solution is, what actions did I take today in relationship to that problem or in relationship to my life today? You know, and that solution, how was it something in the program? Was it a tool? Was it reading a piece of literature? Was it praying 3 times a day where I normally only pray once a day? Was it hearing an idea in a meeting that I hadn't considered before, something that I said, I poo-pooed, and I thought, oh, wait, today, oh, that's just exactly what I need. So whatever your circumstances, you will find the answers here. So I say to everybody, just stay. You'll find your way and you will find solutions are here. So they tell us in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that, when we share what happened, what it was like. I mean, what it was like, what happened, and what we're like now. So I'm going to try and follow that format. What happened was that I grew up in a family with a grandfather who was a normal eater. My mother was an occasional dieter, but that wasn't her story. And my grandmother, who today I believe belonged in the rooms, because she was a snacker and she would eat graze all day and would go to bed with food. And she had some of those little pills that they used to give you to take and shots and all that stuff. So that's the household I grew up in, and my grandmother was my primary caregiver. So, whoa, sorry. Cats all over the place today. And so that was, that was what I did as well. But I didn't do it because she did it. I know today I did it because I had the gene. I had the compulsive gene. And my compulsive gene turned it came attached to food. When I grew up, I always thought, until I looked back at pictures years ago, from years ago, I always thought I was a fat kid, but my head was already working. Because when I looked at those pictures, I was on the slender side. I was on the almost skinny side. Look at pictures of 8, 9, 10, 11. I was not heavy. Became a teenager, gained some of that weight, and what we did, what everybody else did, because I wanted to be part of the crowd, because I wasn't feeling part of the crowd. So everybody dieted, so I dieted. And that's what I did for decades. I did the diets, I did the newest and greatest. I did the ones that were very restrictive. I did the starvation. I did the, the pay and pray, pay and pay, it should be pay and pray. I did the pay and weigh. I've done all of those, So whatever you've done, some people have had surgery, some people gone to rehab, some people have prayed to the top of the mountain to the guru, whatever it is, we've all done it, and you'll hear it in the rooms. And that reminds me, that I'm not alone, because I came in with the shame of nobody's doing this but me. It's like dieting was okay, but I couldn't keep, and what I said was I was a great dieter, not a good maintainer. And so the dieting was me getting my alcoholic foods out of me, was counteracting my allergy to food. But the maintaining is the obsession and the malady of the spirit. And that's the component for me that I did not have. So I'm good at following rules. I'm good at, I get, if you tell me this much, that much, that much. I was good. Maintaining meant I was on my own, and heaven help me. And I didn't know how to access God for my food. So therefore, I was not able to maintain, the up and down weight loss. Even though I could maintain it for a while, I would always lose it. I would always lose it. I went, I remember, when I, as the idea of somewhat of body personality dysmorphia, meaning I wasn't clear about what I looked like and what who I was, that was started as a child, but it lasted into my adulthood. And one of the ways it showed up was, I will tell you that I am 5'3". I've been 5'3" forever. I'm at a healthy body weight on the lower side for what I used to think I needed to be. And I've got a normal personality when I'm not in the food. And but all this time I thought I was, though I knew I could, when I never lied on my license or anything about how tall I was, but I always thought of myself as taller, bigger, and needed to suck all the air out of the room. And I did not realize, so this may make you laugh, I hope. I did not realize till I got into online dating at an older age that I'm a small, petite woman. How could I not know that? I'm looking in the mirror. How could I not know that I'm a small? These guys that are 500 pounds think it's, oh, we'd be a good match. And I'm like, I'll be a bug squashed. It's not going to happen. But those are the things that my obsessive mind, even into adulthood, even probably even early into the program, that was the lies that my body still told me, that my, not my body, that my brain still told me. That was, and things that were not true. I remembered that as one day I've been retired a long time now, and I remember one day, and this is before I was in the rooms, but I think, evidence that God was in my life and that I was seeking, because I remember I just left on a walk, and I had said I'd done one more diet up and down, and I remember I said, "Okay, God, please don't let me have to go on one more diet." And he heard me, because really looking back at most of that time after that, I would do more binging or some sporadic eating, but for the most part, I was eating too much, so I was still overeating, but I wasn't overeating all the snacky sweet things that I used to eat. I would
Yeah,
have
that's
periods, thank you, but I wasn't. And so he allowed me to enjoy healthy foods and make those the predominant foods, that I was eating. I remember that before I got into the rooms, I traveled for work, and I traveled to out of the country. And because I had had a breakup with my high school boyfriend, I was in my 20s by now, I ate this thing every night, and I thought I'd be okay because I was walking 15 blocks from the store back to my dorm where I was staying. And I rolled off. My mother said she thought I was rolling off the plane. I came back 15 pounds heavier than when I left. Year forward, and I still was that. A year forward, I went to another country, also related to work, and I had a new boyfriend who eventually became my husband. And I did some really crazy restrictive dieting. I came back 15 pounds lighter. So food's part of my story. It's there. I commiserate, I celebrate with it. And today I can be happy or sad. And food is not my first go-to. I'm not saying I don't ever overeat, because that would not be the truth, but I don't overeat to the extent that I used to. And for the most part, I eat healthy food at healthy times in healthy amounts. When I came into the rooms, I was, for many years, I would not eat until 5 o'clock, because I thought if I ate anything during the day, that I would eat all day long, because that was my experience. So I just wouldn't eat. Coffee, water, occasionally a salad, but especially during the weekday when I was at work, I just wouldn't eat. And then, because I thought my brain said, "Oh, if you don't eat until 5 o'clock, then how much can you eat between 5 and midnight?" I did plenty of damage, and even when I got to a healthy body weight, I wasn't happy, because that was not the issue. So what happened was, I was walking across a major street in Los Angeles, and I tried to call some fellows in another fellowship. And nobody was answering the phone. Nobody answered the phone. And so I finally called somebody whose number I had, but I wasn't close to. And I'm crying, every orifice is leaking something. And I called, and I'm crying. I'm so unhappy. And so I said, "I can't stop eating." And so she said, "Oh, congratulations. You've been touched by the hand of God today. He's brought you to a new level of awareness." And that dried up everything immediately. I'm like, "But you don't understand. I'm telling you here that I'm miserable." And and that was what I needed to hear. That was God entering my life through somebody else. So I never know. That's a good reminder. I never know when I'm going to be, God's going to use me for a channel. So my intent is always to show up to the best example that I can be. But sometimes in my bad example is what the example somebody else needs to see. But I'm not going to try and show up as a bad example. The next day, I talked to my sponsor in the other program, and she is not a, does not need this program. And I'm crying again, because what had happened the night before I got that first message, I found myself in my kitchen after eating two bags of one of my favorite foods, and I was on my face, and I said, "Oh my God, help me! Just help me!" I was miserable. My stomach was distended. I was so, I'd eaten way too much. It was, more than I should have. So that was my first message, was that I'd been touched by the hand of God. The second message came from my sponsor the following day. And I'm talking about, "Well, I don't know." She said, "You need to go to Overeaters Anonymous, because she believes in 12-step work." And I said, "Well, I don't know. I go to an open AA meeting." I was giving her all these other alternatives instead of saying, "Okay, I'll find an OA meeting." So the last thing she said to me that day was, she said, "Find an OA meeting. Call me when you found it." Click. Now that everybody's got a click story. Most people have a click story from their sponsor. That was mine. She hung up. And guess what? When I did what she told me to do, I found a meeting exactly 5 minutes from my house, right down the street. And that was the meeting I went to. I was ready. I went to and I sat down. I claimed my seat and I've never left. I should say that 3 years before that, I came in December of 2014. So time some must have been in 2003, 2011. I came in and did a drive-by. I looked at the people in the meeting. They didn't look like me. They didn't talk like me. They weren't having food, things, food that I was doing. I took my newcomer packet and left. So when I came back 3 years later, I was ready. And I can't tell you, I can tell you what, I can't tell you what the speaker was talking about. I can just tell you, I felt at home. And I heard it in the promise when it said, I put my hand in yours and together we can do what we could never do alone. I no longer have to rely on my unsteady willpower. That was that exhale for me. It was like, okay, I don't have to do this alone. And so I got into the program. After 6 months, I found a sponsor. She gave me a guided abstinence. She sponsored directed abstinence, which was no recreational sugar. And I added on to that no honey and no agave, no molasses, nothing that's processed. And that began my actively working a program. I started working in the Big Book in Los Angeles. At that time, they were offering OA workshops, Big Book workshops to work the steps. And that I went through the steps twice using that manner. And it was helped because it was done in a group. And so I could begin to, even though I had read the Big Book from a different perspective, I could begin to see from the OA perspective, which was important for me, how the steps applied, when we would read the doctor's opinion or how it works, substituting food for whatever, whatever the chapter was talking about, seeing how my life was unmanageable in so many areas of my life. And that began, my journey is I had that was not the first time I had done the steps. It was not the first time that I'd worked the fourth step. And I've worked them since that. But what I can tell you is every time, and for newcomers, this may or may not make sense, just take what you like. And what I like to say is, and I bring this from AA, take what you like and file the rest. Because I can tell you my experience has been something that I hear today may not make any sense to me. And in 6 months or 6 years, I'll hear something and it will make sense to me. So what I don't understand now, I just file it away and hope my little guy with his cane can get around my old library in my head and find just what I need. The steps are designed to are for a couple of things. The steps protect me from me because I'm going to beat myself up. I'm going to hurt myself with food. I'm going to think I know best. And that's all blocks me from God. The steps guide me to the whole purpose of the steps is to guide me to a deeper connection with God. So in step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, we tried to carry the message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. So there it's laid out. That's why I'm working the steps, so I can experience that spiritual awakening. And a spiritual awakening is some event that happens in my life where I know that it's directly related to my connection to a power greater than myself. And then as part of step 12, I'm also required, I say required, it says try, but I have to be available to carry the message to other suffering compulsive overeaters through sponsorship, through fellowship, through making outreach calls. And then it tells me that I'm doing this so I can practice the principles in all of my affairs. That doesn't mean my affairs are not just what's in the room. My affairs are my life. So I look at the meetings and what I learn in the from the steps as my laboratory. And so I get to practice in the laboratory. I get to te practice telling the truth with my fellows, with my sponsor, with my fellows. I get to practice having courage to put down the food and to ask God, as I get to do that in the laboratory. I get to take the focus off of looking at you and blaming other people and pick up the mirror and look at myself and say, oh, what's my part? Because that's the only thing that I will ever be able to change. I heard a speaker once say, you know, the good news is that I'm the problem. The problem is with me. Because if the problem relies with anything out there, I can't do anything about it. So the little adage of bless them, change me is really important because I get to ask for the best things that, you know, I would want for myself, for other people, and then I get to see where I need to dig in and do the work. So I really think I'm into the what, you know, the what happened, that what happened was what I said, and then what it's like now.
20 minutes.
Well, thank you. What it's like now is that I have a God of my understanding, and some days the God of my not understanding, which means that I know that it's not me. I have a higher power that directs my life. I have, and he directed my life when I was crossing the street that day, and he brought the exact right person to me. And I had taken the cotton that he took the cotton out of my ears, and he shut my mouth so I could hear that I was having a spiritual awakening. Because that was all God. He utilized somebody else. He utilizes whoever he knows that I need, or whatever situation I need to show me that, you know, it's not what's going on in my life is not something that I can, you know, that I created. And so what happened was that I came into the room. What it's like now is that I have a very strong enough belief in a power greater than myself. I have a morning spiritual practice, which looks like about 15 to 20 minutes every morning at the beginning part of it, where I'm on my knees, I'm saying my prayers. I go to a meditation meeting 3 days a week. I read my literature, and I write my journal. And I learned to write in a journal here in these rooms because I tried over the years. It didn't happen. At the beginning of COVID, I was in a meeting, and the woman, the way she structures her journal writing was a way that I could understand and that I could relate to. And so ever since then, I've been doing my journaling. For me, I get on my knees because it's not, God knows who God is. I forget who God is. And so for me, that's part of my ability, part of my reminder to me to humble myself, to ask God. And that I'm to and to lower myself so to remind myself that I am not less than, but I'm not God. I take my calls and I make my calls, my sponsees call with the call time, and I call my sponsees as sponsors at my designated call time. So in the morning, about the first 2 hours of the morning, I would say, are involved with some aspect of the program, whether it's reading the literature, whether it's going to a meeting, whether it's the prayers, talking to people. Since I've been in the rooms, I was doing all those things which are so important to me. I felt myself slipping. I wasn't, I guess maybe it was in prelapse, but I was doing all those things. I still have my sponsor, I'm still doing that. But there's something within me, and I believe that was God nudging me. And what I heard in a meeting was, it's Jim's story, and there's stories in the big book. And it talked about when he said, and all went well for a while, but soon he began to drink because he forgot to enlarge his spiritual life. You know? And what I knew, I'd started to go to a meeting as you know, in the OA, in an OA meeting, and every emphasis was placed on making those three calls a day. And some meetings and some lines of sponsorship encourage that more than others. This one, absolutely, three calls a day minimum. And I heard that. And I heard, but from that sentence, from that little reading in the big book, you know, I thought, oh, because I thought, well, what can I do? I can go to more meetings. Well, of course, more meetings are always a good idea, but I'm a meeting girl. So going to more meetings, that'd be helpful. But what was I not doing? I was not being consistent with making my calls. So I made a commitment to make those three calls a day. Once I started doing that, my program changed. I got be better in sync with God. I got better in sync with my program. And you know, so those are the kinds of things that, you know, that have happened to me. That I believe is God. I mean, I've read that sentence 12 million times. That day, was the exact same sentence. Or when I'm reading in my literature and I've lined underlined every single other sentence in that particular page, and there's the sentence I need that day. That's all God, the way God talks to me. Recently, I was talking to my sponsor, and she said to me, somebody had told her every action is a prayer. I've heard her say that before, that particular day. And I thought, oh, she says, so you in the morning, you get on your knees and you pray for abstinence, or you pray that you don't, the food doesn't call to you. And then by the afternoon, what am I taking, what am I putting in my basket at the market? Am I putting in extra food? It may not even be non-abstinent food, but is it food that I really need? So I have to, my actions show God what it is I really want. And he always gives me what I need. He absolutely gives me what I need. There was something else I was going to say. I've got in my life again. I was dating for a while, and the man that I was dating, I believe he did not self-diagnose, but from his actions, I believed him to be a sugar addict. And I was not called to eat. I was not called to overeat. I was not called to eat those sugary, lovely things that I used to like to eat. And God gave me that food neutrality, because he would have dessert after dinner and he would order a latte for me. And I never wanted to reach across the table with my fork, either grab his plate or reach across and help him to share. Never occurred to me. And that's God. That's God's protection. That's what I get in this program. The closer I grow to God, the more I'm protected by God. And he can only protect me if I invite him in. It said, God's a gentleman. He never goes anywhere he's not invited. So if I don't invite him, and he continue to invite him with gratitude and prayer and acts of kindness and generosity, God's there, but he doesn't come in because I'm not opening the door. I'm not opening the door to him. I recently traveled, and they say our program is transportable. It is. I traveled with women who are not in our program. And by the time we got off the plane, we'd all forgotten that this plane does not offer any type of food that you don't pay for. And then as for, according to me, junk, not something I could eat. And it got to be late, and it was only fast food places open. And so they said, oh God, we're so hungry. And I was hungry too. But I said, could we find someplace else? We rode around for another 15, 20 minutes. There absolutely was not anything else open. And so they said, we're going to have to go through. And I said, okay, because we have steps and we have traditions. And I live by those traditions now. They are so important to my life because I got to apply the first tradition. First tradition says our common welfare comes first. Personal progress depends upon unity of the group. So what was for the best? That was that we find food. Turns out we went through this drive-through, and they had one vegetarian option. Okay, I could have that. And I had one more other piece of food that I could have, and it was fine. And the particular area where I was in, it's not LA. LA, you can get anything 24 hours a day, healthy, not healthy, you name it. This particular place, not so much. They prepared food in a way that I don't normally like to prepare my food. But you know what? I made do. I could make do for 4 days. I could make do. And the one commitment I made, and there was a God shot before I went on that particular journey, but somebody made an outreach call to me. And she was saying, oh, she had not been able to get to a meeting, and she didn't even make time for calls. So now she's trying to make her calls. And I committed to her, and I don't even know who it was. I committed to her and to God that I would make at least two outreach calls a day. I was on somebody else's car. I didn't have the opportunity to say, well, I'm going to go. I was traveling kind of in a pack. So it wasn't like I could always say, I'm just going to step aside here for an hour and go to a meeting. But I could find 15 minutes, 10 minutes to make two calls. Every single day that I was gone, I made those two calls, and nobody cared. I just stepped away out of the room, went down, to the coffee shop. It didn't matter. Stood outside the door one time. It was too cold to go outside. But that's where God, when I invite God in, God always shows up. And it's my job to work those steps, to work my to work or have a closer connection with God. It's my job to continue to look for God. Every day I seek God in my life. I seek, where has God shown up for me today? Where has God allowed me? Where have I chosen to be of service today? And sometimes that means to keep my mouth shut and let the other person say what they need to say. Sometimes it's having a cat that just will not stay out of the way. Thank you, darling. It's knowing that. I think this will be my last example, was that I was graced to be, my daughter asked me to help her to do the wedding dress selection. And anybody who's been through that knows that's not always easy. And she wasn't even a bridezilla, but bride, get up, I get a little self-centered. Anyhow, and so we were leaving, we were, she was having a conversation, we were having a conversation about things that aren't, we don't normally have a conversation about, and she had an idea of she wanted it to a certain outcome. And I felt
Time.
myself saying, time, was that too? Time?
Time, yes.
Okay, sorry. Okay. Anyhow, so I'll wrap up with a sentence from the 12 and 12 that I heard somebody always closes 3-minute shares with, and it is, I am absent. It's from the big book. It's from the 12 and 12. And I'm telling you, I'm rephrasing it a little bit because it says sober. I am absent today only by the grace of God. And any success I am having is more his than mine. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you so much, Susan.